Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. I am Lauren Tenney, and this is the Talk with Tenney show. I hope you're all doing well out there this evening. There are a couple of callers online already, and so I'm just going to open up lines in case you want to talk, because we've been having some technical difficulties with that one issue. So area code 503, your line is open. Okay, I'm going to guess that you're just listening, which is perfectly fine. If you want to call in, you can do so at area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. If you need a toll-free line, you can call in at 855-346-3351. If you are listening online and you want to talk, be sure to press the 1 button, and hopefully it will work and I will be able to get to you. So we have some very good news tonight, some interesting news for a change concerning some legislation. I just saw the entire Pelletier family, including Justina, on the rerun of the Huckabee show, and it was really amazing to see how much time was given. I again want to extend an invitation to the Pelletiers, and particularly to Justina, if you ever want to talk about what happened there and what you saw happening to other people, you just give me a holler. And I think it's really amazing. And in the meantime, I want to alert people to this bill, H.R. 4989, which in a press release out of Michelle Bachmann's office, it says Representatives Bachmann, Bass, Marino, and McDermott introduced Justina's Law. And this came out June 27th, 2014. And Bachmann joined with Bass, Marino, and McDermott, the co-chairs of the Foster Youth Caucus, to introduce bipartisan legislation that prohibits federal funding for medical experimentation on a ward of the state. This is amazing. This should have happened. This should have happened decades ago. If Loretta Bender wasn't allowed to experiment on children who were in the foster care system with electroshock, electroshock would never have been able to be used on children. This kind of thing is what happened to Justina is horrifying, and what her parents and family went through is tragic, and I'm so, so glad that they fought and won and have Justina home. But it's not over, and this is really highlighting that there are so many young people in this country and people who are adults who have been through this as children of what happens in the foster care system. And I'm so excited that this H.R. 4989 is been introduced. And so the press release from Bachmann's office continues, the bill H.R. 4989, nicknamed Justina's Law, is a response to the recent case of 16-year-old Justina Pelletier, who was finally released from Boston Children's Hospital back to the care of her family after a 16-month custody battle between the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and Justina's parents. 16 months. I mean, how horrible. So BCH and many other hospitals have an internal policy that allows for children who are deemed wards of the state, including foster children, to receive treatment or be involved in research that presents great risk, even if there is no prospect of any benefit to the child. And this is exactly what part of what we were trying to highlight in Devoiced and other people who for decades have been saying that they are experimenting on children in foster care and that this has to end. And so H.R. 4989 does seem very promising, and you can get the bill of the text. I posted it up on my Facebook page, but you can get the bill of the text probably just by going to congress.gov and typing in H.R. 4989. The official title of the proposed legislation is to prohibit federal funding of any treatment or research in which a ward of the state is subjected to greater than minimal risk to the individual's health with no or minimal prospect of direct benefit. And, you know, one of the things that Lou Pelletier said tonight was that this is somehow involving Harvard, and that Harvard's, you know, director or somebody in power there was, I don't want to put words in his mouth, so I'm really loosely paraphrasing here, but somebody in power at Harvard had an interest in somatoform disorder, and that is part of why Justina was subjected to this kind of thing, as part of medical experimentation, which really is a deep, deep, deep problem. And so, yeah, that's it. H.R. 4989. If you'd like to call in and talk about this or anything else, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, it's 855-346-3351. And so, you know, in the text of the bill, as of 6:29, text has not been received. It says on congress.gov for the 113th Congress. But it... bills are generally sent to the Library of Congress from GPO, the Government Printing Office, a day or two after they are introduced on the floor of the House or Senate. Delays can occur when there are a large number of bills to prepare or when a very large bill has to be printed. And so as of 6:29, text has not been received for H.R. 4989 to prohibit federal funding or any treatment in which a ward of the state is subjected to greater than minimal risk to the individual's health with no or minimal prospect of direct benefit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Under actions on H.R. 4989, it was introduced in the House. So that's where it is. It's been introduced, and I guess people are waiting for text. And it's got three co-sponsors, Representative Karen Bass, I think that's California, Democrat, Jim McDermott, Washington Democrat, and Tom Marino, Pennsylvania Republican. So if Marino... I wonder if Marino might be somebody to talk to about H.R. 3717. If they see the rights issue of this, it would be interesting to see how they would vote on these other things. Anybody has that information, feel free to call in. Is Marino involved with either side of the H.R. 3717 debacle, which is the Murphy bill, just in case anybody doesn't realize what I'm talking about. But this with Justina's law, H.R. 4989, this is so exciting because it really brings us to a whole new place of conversation of when you're a quote-unquote ward of the state. Whether or not they can do experiments on you as a child if you are, like, in foster care. But what about, like, if you are a ward of the state because you are an involuntary inmate and you don't have a choice about it, and where are the protections then? Especially when this is guided as, like, medicine. You know, like, how does this get extended to people? But I think the thing that's blowing my mind away is that somebody somewhere finally has introduced at least the title of a bill. It'll be interesting when the actual text of the bill comes out to see what happens. But to have an actual title of a bill that addresses children in foster care being used for medical experimentation. So the Bachman press release goes on, and it says, quote, whether it is one child or thousands, it is our duty to guarantee that children are kept safe from harm while in the custody of their respective states. Not all these children have families like the Pelletiers willing or able to advocate on their behalf. 16 months ago, Justina was a figure skater. Today, she cannot stand, sit, or walk on her own. It is unconscionable what happened to Justina, and we must do all we can to prevent it from ever happening again. Removing federal funding from such experimentation is an important first step. And that's a quote from Representative Michelle Bachman. And so the most conservative of conservatives can see how this is a problem. And then Karen Bass, Representative Karen Bass, says, children need to be loved and cared for and not treated as something to be experimented on. Foster care children are particularly vulnerable because they may not have parents to advocate for them. This bill will make it clear that children are blessings, not guinea pigs. And, you know, this is, again, so that's Karen Bass. And then Representative Tom Marino, Pennsylvania. Any of you folks live here? Minnesota, California, Pennsylvania. The bond, this is the quote, the bond between children and parents is sacred. The closeness and level of intimate understanding between them transcends our societal constructs. In Justina's case, she was kept from her loved ones and essentially detained by the hospital and the state. She was lucky to have parents that fought for her and leveraged the support of the media and public officials. Yet too many children do not have parents to speak for them and look out for their health and best interests during times of physical and emotional vulnerability. That fact saddens me. It would sadden any person who knows the power of love and affection. That is why I am proud to support Representatives Bachman, Bass, and McDermott on this legislation, because no child, with parents or not, should be subject to medical experimentation under the legal designation as a ward of the state. And that's Representative Tom Marino. And Representative Jim McDermott, Washington, finally says, the strength and bravery that Justina Pelletier and her family have shown in the face of incredible leadership is a guide star for us all. We must act to protect and cherish children in the care of the state and make sure that they are not subject to risky medical experimentation. I look forward to working with Representatives Bachman, Bass, Marino, and countless other colleagues from both sides of the aisle to pass Justina's law as quickly as possible. And so that is just going to be an amazing thing if finally, once and for all, young people who are in foster care will be protected from being being experimented on medically, and any young person who is listed as a ward of the state. And so we need to get we need all the lawyers on board at this point. We need to figure out how do we create an educational campaign that makes sure that every single person who is involved or not involved with psychiatry is aware of the fact that their child is not allowed to be taken away from them based on some fraudulent concept to be part of an experiment to find out whether or not that fraudulent concept may someday hold water. This is phenomenal that this is being brought to attention, and I applaud the Pelletier family for being so strong and brave and speaking out and not stopping and being relentlessly going after and calling attention to what happened to them and their daughter. And again, Justina, if you ever want to talk, please let me know. Area code 202, your line is open.
Yes. When was this? Was this introduced just in the last week?
Justina was freed last week.
This bill, was this just introduced?
June 27th.
Oh, okay. And it was just introduced June 27th?
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying to look at on the congressional record to see if I can see a copy of it.
I posted it up on my Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
It should be the the top thing on my Facebook page, which is /, you know, facebook.com/TennyLauren, if anybody's looking. And so the actual text of the bill is not available yet, but it has been introduced, and if you go to, H.R. 4980. And so this is really exciting because this starts to seriously eliminate, if they can get this passed, it is a first step toward eliminating a lot of other things. And, you know, Michelle Bachmann said that, and I agree with her. I think that this is, you know, and again, you don't know what the text is, but from the title, if they stick to the title, the text should be okay.
Well, I see that there's two Democrats, so this is kind of bipartisan.
It's entirely bipartisan, and it's, you know, it's Bachmann and McDermott, and they're both like really big, you know, Democrat to Republican. You know, I think that this is, you know, and Marino and Bass, and so it definitely. It definitely has bipartisan support because it got to the public. And that's when people can get to the public and be told what's happening in a way that is curable, you know, things can change. And so that's what that is. If you'd like to call in and talk about this or anything else, the number is area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, it's 855-346-3351. And I, you know, people tell me that they are trying to call, but that they can't get through and that the one isn't working. And so I'm going
they
to just open
one. They have to do star one. Do ask a question. They do star one.
Try star one.
Ask
if you want to talk, try star one, because maybe one isn't the actual cue. Maybe it's star one to talk.
Yeah, I use star one because I tried using one long time ago, and nothing happened. So.
Okay, so let's see if we press star one. To talk, if that works, let's see if
because it usually says you're in the queue, and if you hit star one again, it'll take you out of the queue. So
okay, so it's star one in order to talk. All right, so yeah, but this is really exciting. Some bipartisan legislation that is holding the system responsible, that is saying like no medical experimentation on children who are considered wards of the state. I think that like this kind of thing needs to be extended to anybody who's a ward of the state, regardless of age, especially like any adult who is involuntarily committed. Right, you are now a ward of the state. Is that right?
Yeah.
So I think that this extension to medical experimentation needs to go across the board to any, to not be limited by age or by foster care. But I think that foster care obviously is the logical place to start. Do you know what I mean? And I don't dispute that at all. But that this should extend to the idea of them not being able to experiment on children. I don't know if you were on when I mentioned Loretta Bender earlier.
No.
Okay, so...
Who was Loretta Bender?
Loretta Bender in the 1940s was the... who I call the children's shock doc. She was the one who was electroshocking all of the children at Bellevue Hospital in the 1940s. And I know a lot about this because I had the privilege of working with someone and having this person be a participant in the devoiced research. And in 1944, he was electroshocked by Loretta Bender.
Wow.
And so I've
is
been
he
trying to...
Still living?
He is still living, yes, and he is a phenomenal activist and advocate. And And so he had just mentioned her name briefly, and one day when I was writing the dissertation, I went and I was like, because I was listening to the video over and over again, and I was like, who is that? I don't know who that is. And I Google it, and all of a sudden there's like 100,000 hits, right? So it turns out that this woman who electroshocked him wasn't just a psychiatrist, but like the psychiatrist who wrote the diagnosis of childhood autism and schizophrenia, the psychiatrist who did all of this electroshocking, the psychiatrist who developed the Bender Gestalt test, which is still used to this day. Like, she really, you know, was hailed among her colleagues and her work on electroshock, and then at Bellevue, and then in the 1960s, she was giving children as part of MK Ultra LSD through federal funding. And I found her papers, and I've been through her papers, and her papers are housed at Brooklyn College Library, City University of New York, by all, you know, oddness. But this is what she was doing. She had an arrangement with, she worked at Bellevue, taught at NYU, and had a relationship with the New York, the New Foundling House, the New York Foundling Society or House, of kids that they were using for research. And I've been trying to call attention to this since I found out about it about 2 months ago or so. And I've written about it, and I have, like, an article about it. And, like, the 33rd degree Scottish Rite Masons were funding some of this. You know who the fiduciary was? You know who the fiduciary was?
I don't know why you're surprised.
Right, but do you know who the fiduciary was? The National Committee on Mental Hygiene. Clifford Beers and Adolf Meyer, and, you know, what is now Mental Health America.
They were the fiduciaries?
Well, they were the 33rd degree Scottish Rite Masons gave them grants that they then gave to Loretta Bender, who was at Bellevue and NYU. And so there's a whole wealth of, like, this tied directly to the eugenics movement. And this bill, H.R. 4989, the Bachman-Bass-Marino-McDermott bill, will eliminate it will prohibit federal funding for medical experimentation on a ward of the state. And I think that is just crucial. And you know what? We probably don't even need any extra wording, because they say it's a ward of the state, and that's what people who are involuntarily involved are. And so any of these drugs which are in an experimental phase, and any of this other stuff, it changes the whole...
Yeah, well, I want to see the text of it, and see what actually says. It'll be interesting, but I wonder also, will it preclude people from, you know, some procedures that we think of as being okay, like transplants and stuff like that. So I was surprised to hear a few years ago, I don't know if it's still the same, that they might be considered to be experimental, especially by insurance companies. I think this is good news, but I'd want to see what's actually in the bill that Michelle Bachman actually, but I guess Huckabee, the people on the left, on the right, who have an interest in states' rights issues, these are state issues, because wasn't Christina kidnapped? Well, not kidnapped. She was taken from Connecticut to Massachusetts, right?
Oh, she was napped, and they're using the language kidnap. Huckabee is using the language that the state kidnapped her. Yeah. That's the language Huckabee is using. So I get what you're saying about that kind of other way of, like, actual medical stuff. But even Even then, yeah. I mean, it will be really interesting when they produce it, whatever the text is.
It may be out on Monday or Tuesday, because I think that they're just, I looked up and the congressional record was for Thursday, because I think it's the same site you had, that congress.gov.
Yeah.
And people should know that's where to look to see if you want information about bills or laws, is go to congress.gov. And in fact, if you don't have a computer and you know the bill, ring up your congressman and ask them, can they send you a copy of it?
You know, I think it would be interesting if they put in just like, just put psychiatric experimentation instead of medical experimentation, and then that eliminates a lot of those issues. Because you know what Lou Pelletier called it, the mad psychiatric experiment. And it was like, that's how uh-huh. he's referring to this whole situation that his daughter had to, like, you know, survive, a mad psychiatric experiment, and that's exactly, you know, that's exactly what this is. And so, you know, the idea of then actual medical procedures, which may be considered experimental or something, which still are probably, there's a difference between getting an experimental treatment and being experimented on, isn't there?
Yeah. But, you know, that's probably happened to a lot of people. And for people that don't know that she was a young, you may have, if you said this before, just say it. She was a young person who parented. She was. They took her for treatment. They had a illness in their family, a hereditary illness. And what happened was the people from psychiatry came down and they said, "Oh no, she's not really sick." And they wanted her to get psychiatric intervention.
They were trying to say, apparently this is what I learned tonight, was that they were trying to say that she had somatoform disorder. So within several minutes or hours of meeting her, they decided this and they institutionalized her. But apparently somatoform disorder can take more than a year to actually diagnose somebody with that. And it turns out that the person who somehow has some power here, who somehow also seems to have some power at Harvard, was his research interest is somatoform disorder.
So they had some kind of
And so this was all part of some kind of experiment is what it seems like they're talking about today, and with the legislation preventing people from being experimented on.
Good news,
yeah.
And not to take something away from her, but many people have been subject to psychiatric interventions that have had physical problems like, you know, thyroid condition or other physical conditions that might mimic. And I know you don't want to use the words, but what they say, the different labels that they give in the DSM, there are certain medical conditions that look like that look like that. And so not just Christina, but a lot of people may have been not taking anything away from that, and I think it's wonderful to get the legislation, but people should pay attention when they have a physical condition. I know last week I had someone on the show, we were talking about how medical doctors were disregarding people's physical ailments because they had a psychiatric diagnosis. And people really got to be careful about that and, you know, move on to another doctor if they don't take your physical complaints seriously, because, you know, if your physical complaints are not addressed, you know, or if they use some of these psychiatric interventions, you know, you can end up just like Christina. She ended up in a wheelchair.
Right. Justina. Yeah. I think that's absolutely right. And until we get, you know, that's one of the things that I said at the beginning as I was scrolling around, that, you know, until we really get to see what the text of the bill is, so I agree with you completely, you know, there's no way of really knowing. And then this whole other issue of what about adults and you know, the, what is quote-unquote minimal risk and all of these kinds of things we really need to, you know, be concerned about. And then what is it potentially, like you brought up, what does it potentially eliminate for somebody? You know, does it then put people at a disadvantage for something else potentially? So I think that, you know, anytime, you know, so it'll be interesting, but to see what happens, but that there's this kind of attention that's being paid, I think on the other hand, like, we also really need to try to figure out, you know, how to make sure that there's representation from people who've been doing this a long time in this. Because if you don't know the first thing about research and you're just, you know, and you're just, you know, somebody who's struggling and now all of a sudden you're being presented the potential to be a research subject, like they do with cancer trials or whatever, all that other stuff, you know.
You know, most of the asylums, most of the, I'm just using the word asylum, but most of the warehouses that they kept people in were always located in very poor neighborhoods. And that's for a reason, you know. People oftentimes, it's like, you know, if people tell their friends about the show, they hear about the torture and the misuse of medicine against people. You know, I keep going back to this, you know, comparing it to what happened in Nazi Germany. You know, people claim they did not know what was happening. You know, many times people don't know what's happening in these, they don't know what's happening in doctor's offices. They don't know what's happening in hospitals. And they should know. I mean, these should be feature-length stories about what's happening. I mean, a magazine article. I don't think, I mean, this is the kind of thing that, you know, 60 Minutes used to do, but they don't do now since they've been corrupted to tell this story and to show how this young lady, you know, her family had to fight to get her out. And just think about all the people who don't have the resources that are still locked away in hospital and institutions. And they don't have to be big asylums anymore because many places now have contract beds in private hospitals. And you can do a lot of damage to people, even not keeping them for years, but you can do a lot of damage to people in 30 days.
Yep. You sure can, and I think that that's part of what I'm so excited about, that this bill has been introduced, even though we don't know what the text of it is, and even though it might not being exactly what we would see as wanting it, but that the Pelletiers weren't stopping with getting their daughter home, that they're trying to call attention to all of these children that this potentially could be happening to. And I think that that's a really a thing that should be really honored, and that they're not just, you know, crawling back into the woodwork and, you know, trying to hide again from the reality, but they're staying out on the front line and that they're continuing to try to call attention to the fact that the state can take your child away from you if you don't agree with a psychiatric assessment. And that's basically what it's boiled down to. And this added issue of where it seems that Justina was also subjected to medical experimentation, which just adds a whole new horrific twist to the entire thing. And if that's so, I mean, these people's licenses should be stripped anyway, as far as I'm concerned, but some other griever, you know,
they should
respond.
Really have some kind of lawsuit.
They should go to jail or something if they really did medically experiment on her in this way.
And they forbade her parents, is what I understood, you know, just in, you know, going in and out and seeing it, is that during some of this time, they actually kept the parents from seeing her. Which I have never, ever heard of that unless there was, only on the cases where there's some child abuse or something like that, but
They treated these people terribly. They absolutely treated these people terribly. And yeah, I mean, not only not allowed to see her, but then when they were allowed to see her, I mean, Justina was saying tonight on the show that you know, it would be for an hour and the DCF would be there, and so that she couldn't say what was going on, and that the phone calls would be only once a week and supervised, and so she couldn't say what was going on. And she just, you know, she did say that they were mean and that they were, you know, that they were mean to her. And, you know, to not have, you'd be able to be with your family or your friends. Like, this is, you know, and then if this really was all a medical experiment on top of everything else, and I don't mean that as saying, like, I don't believe them that they're saying this. I mean, like the audacity of these people to then have all of this been part of a medical experiment.
Someone's research project. Because I can, you know, I can easily see this happening. You know, people have, you know, they have a niche and they just say, oh, this looks like whatever. And, you know, this is what they would want to see. And let's, you know, study this and see what we can do. That could be, you know, I mean, that sounds like what it was. You know, that would be just like, you know, whatever your PhD thesis was on, if you came across a case that was looked like it might be classic that, you know. But it's unfortunate. People shouldn't be allowed to do that.
No, I mean, and that's the other thing, is that there was at least one other person who was involved in the research, that in the devoiced research, that had the same issue of being an experiment while in foster care. And I have been trying to reach out to people and talk to people. Like, this is ongoing. This is right now. There are people who are having this, and it's just... It's really horrible. So I am going to wind up calling over to Bachman and McDermott's office, Marino and Bass, on Monday, and see if I can't find some kind of, you know, talk to one of the aides or something, and see if, you know, anybody who's writing the actual thing will talk about this. Because as one of my Facebook friends just texted me, there's going to be lots of opposition to this. There's big money in
what?
Research. NIMH, NIH, universities. I'm reading what one of my Facebook friends have sent me. Just the IRBs, the without full, you know, that they're just passing these without fully reviewing the grants. And it's going to be a big deal, just like it was.
Would be a good thing, then. If they have opposition and they dare, if they dare to come out front on this, if they dare to, you know, to come out and say that they're against this, they'll be showing their true face. This is why, you know, we'll see what the language says.
Well, what spin doctor?
You know,
where's the spin doctor who's going to get this one through? How do you put the positive spin on medically experimenting on children in foster care? We're giving them what they would if their parents were able to. I mean, is that what they're going to, you know what I mean? Like, what kind of, you know, crap are they going to come up to try to defend that? Because this person...
There's only one thing that they can use to defend this, and they can't. You know, in cases like where a person needs a transplant in the bone marrow, which some insurance companies, not the government, some insurance companies claim that they're experimental, that's why they don't pay for them, is that if they say that her life was at risk, and I don't think that her life was at risk. You know, like if you're someone that some procedure that has been going on for, you know, 50, 60 years, but for insurance reasons they say is experimental, then I can see it. But in this case, because of the way that she deteriorated, you know.
Well, I mean,
and that's the thing,
and they prevented her from getting actual medical treatment, and it wasn't just under the guise of this fraudulent diagnosis. It was to test whether this fraudulent diagnosis was legitimate or not. Like, that's part. Like, that's what this when he's saying, when Lou Pelletier, Justina's father, is saying it's a mad psychiatric experiment, and talking about Harvard being, like, intimately involved in this whole mess with the state and the hospital and all this other stuff. Like, this is the same thing as that we have here with the Columbia Institute of Psychiatric Institute and NKI and NYU, and which is the university in D.C. that's in collusion with St. Elizabeth's.
Well, Harvard is the same people that they found Hood disease, and where some of the other people who are whispering in Ted and Tim Murphy's ear come from, you know.
St. Elizabeth's
University, I just don't understand them to be involved in such shenanigans like this.
Yeah. If you'd like to talk about this or anything else, the number to call in is area code 267-521-0167, area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, it's 855-346-3351. That's 855-346-3351. Also, if you're online and you want to talk, press star 1, and that should get you linked in. Because the 1 by itself.
Did you see the, Laura, did you see, I think I sent you the clip. I may or may not have. There was a story in the Washington Post today, a rather lengthy story about a gentleman who was a recluse, and it was one of those stories where they were trying to...
Oh, the yellow door?
Yeah, they were trying to make the case for ALT.
Yeah, what a drama. I read that whole thing. It was long.
I can't believe the...
They have to be working on this story for a while, right? 890-some-odd days. I mean, this is
And look how many words it was. Look how many words that story was.
It was long. Usually you're lucky if you get an inch of print, right? This is just, it's just never ending. It's got, like, it's got chapter headings.
Well, what this story was about was, I guess they were trying to say that they pictured this gentleman who had, I guess, at one time he had a six-figure job, he had a family, and this is seen through the eyes of his parents and his ex-wife. And he became a recluse. He quit his job. And he was just there. He wasn't bothering anybody. He just didn't come out, changed the locks to his house. We don't know any of the dynamics of whatever else was happening, you know, with the, you know, breakup of the marriage. They didn't say anything about that. But at tail end, they tried to say that, you know, if there had been, they wanted to be able to use forced treatment for this guy.
Right, and that they've gone to all these lengths to try to do it. But, you know, the crafting of this, the novel-esque writing for this is the Washington Post, right?
This is the Washington Post, my hometown newspaper.
National story, but behind the yellow door, a man's mental illness worsens. It was like reading a mini novel. That's what it was like. There should be fair and balance. They should dedicate as much time following somebody who is trying to get off of involuntary outpatient commitment. And every interaction of where every movement you're having is being held under suspicion. And it's a work of creative art.
Yeah, but you know, also the thing about it is, I want to reread it because I couldn't remember what jurisdiction it was because I just had so many things to read this morning. But I remember what Sherry Mead had said to us one time in a training, and Sherry Mead, for people that don't know, is a person who developed intentional peer support. And she's talking about sitting with your own uncomfortableness. And, you know, I was thinking the family members, the ex-wife, the mother and father.
Yeah, the whole...
What they were saying was that they would tell us there's nothing we can do because, you know, he hasn't threatened anybody. He's not messing with anybody. There's, you know, nothing we can do. You know, I said that a couple of weeks ago. I said, if I just want to sit home, eat peanut butter and jelly and not go out, you know, why is it a problem for other people? You know, and...
It really is. I mean, and then, you know, technically, like, she may have owned the house, but he lived there. What if he had broken into her basement and gone fishing through all of her home? Do you know what I mean?
How they broke a window and broke into the house.
And then took pictures of things and made commentary about what was in this house that they broke into.
It looked kind of neat, too, didn't it? The back door and stuff didn't look cluttered or messed up.
No.
It didn't look like the words that they used and stuff, it didn't look like. When I went back and was looking at some of the pictures and stuff, I was expecting, you know, clutter and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know, but I mean, last I checked, breaking into somebody's home is a crime, right?
Yep.
So
all day long.
So, like, that's what I mean. Why, like, in this article, there's detailed explanation of how they decided to break into the house, and then the pictures that they took. Isn't somebody in trouble right now for taking pictures for breaking in? Didn't somebody just kill themselves over this scandal? In one of the politicians from the Tea Party or something, because the aides went in and broke into somebody's house and took pictures of somebody's wife in an adult home or something.
Wow, yeah. I vaguely remember something about that, but they
broke into this house and they went through this person's stuff and nobody is holding anybody accountable. It was perfectly legitimate. So if you are a suspect of a psychiatric something, it is perfectly legitimate for people to commit crimes against you, and for those crimes to be described as help.
It's not perfectly legitimate to. I don't think it's perfectly legitimate to do it. People do it. But the thing about it is people have to sit with their own uncomfortableness about other people's behavior. They have to be able to do that. You know, this is the thing about it is that, you know, you can't just think somebody's, whatever a person is doing within their own four walls, if you don't have smells emanating from the building, it's not burning down, the person's not bothering you. You know, what can you do? Just because you say, well, this person has given up their life. You know, they were making six-figure income. You know, I got to go back and read because I was looking for them to say, well, he had a long history. You know, something happened to what happened to him as a child. I wanted to see a flip side of this story to see what happened to this man. You know, why did he go from having a six-figure income? You know, and they don't talk about the divorce or anything. It's just all of a sudden, it's the yellow door.
Yeah, it really is.
I'm gonna contact the author. I bet you this person has written a book. Because why would the Post, this was a very lengthy article.
Who wrote this? Stephanie McCrummon. It'll be interesting to see.
I bet there's going to be a follow-up story. Cause I have a print paper for today as well. So this is, but this happens all the time. And that's the thing about the Murphy bill. That's what would happen. You would have a police officer, someone could say this. They could gather evidence to be used for your assisted outpatient intervention. What was it? It was IOC.
Yeah, so I think that's Yeah, that's what they're trying to set up, is the evidence and the what stories like this are supposed to do is to create will in the people to strip away some of the people's civil liberties, with the idea that every person thinks that the government is talking about somebody other than themselves. That this would never happen to them, but this can happen to anybody, and that's what people don't get. And the more people it happens to, the more people realize, wait a second, this could happen to anybody. But, you know, and in this article, they're blatantly going after the civil liberties. Like it says, it was the one time he met the threshold of involuntary commitment. He was taken to the emergency room in handcuffs, at which point an array of regulations aimed at protecting his civil liberties kicked in. Within 6 hours, a doctor had to certify that he was dangerous. Within 30 hours, the ER had to locate a bed in a psychiatric hospital or release him. Once he was admitted, he was appointed an attorney, and a hearing was scheduled before a judge who would review whether he was still dangerous enough to stay hospitalized. And even then, he still had to consent to taking medication. And so they're acting like somebody in the situation has so many freaking civil liberties, and that's the problem, and that if only these damn civil liberties weren't in the way, that this person would behave like we wanted him to behave. And that's the problem. And, you know, somebody else texted me a minute ago about, or a little more than 11 minutes ago, about, you know, with the experimentation issue, that the problem is also lawyers. This person says if lawyers or doctors are afraid they will lose their license because of something that they did. And they say that, quote, the government wants to experiment on you. Experimenting on people in mental institutions are not to learn things, but to cover up things. It's a good point. Other people do something wrong, and they blame it on you. And so, you know, we need the lawyers are also part of the problem if the doctors are afraid that they're going to lose their license. And so this is, it all meshes together, and that's back to the experimentation. But the lawyers with the involuntary outpatient commitment, it's the same thing. Nobody wants to take responsibility for it. And so part of, like, the Murphy legislation.
The reason why I put it to your page was because what I have found is that all these articles that are written, whether it's Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, whatever, they have a comment part for people to make comments on. So I would ask some of the listeners to go, because your listeners are probably, you know, better informed about these abuses than some other people, is to go to the WashingtonPost.com and look for Behind the Yellow Door, A Man's Mental Illness Worsens. Also, I'm going to make it my business to, I've crafted like an email to the person who wrote this, because this is a very lengthy story by Stephanie McCrumen. And that's what I've always said to people, is to look behind the person and see what other kinds of stories this person has wrote. She came from Newsday. Stephanie is a national reporter for the Washington Post. Before she was the paper's East Africa bureau chief, she's also written about suburban housing boom and education reform. And so, you know, I try to look behind the writer to see, you know, what other kinds of stories have been written.
Right.
So this sounds more like this is maybe something that someone is starting to write a book.
Yeah, it's like a friggin' novel. It really is. I mean, it's like I would look for connections with NAMI or some family movement or TAC, you know what I mean? Like, it was much more, like, the tracking of it also. Like, was this person being tracked for all of this time during the story? You know, 730 days in. Like, has this story been being written for, you know, 3 or 4 years or something like that? Or was this, like, constructed? Like, I would be really interested to know, like, how this story came to be, because I think your point is really a good one. And I just shared it on the Talk with Tenny Facebook page, and I'm going to share it now on my own page if anybody's looking for this article and wants a interesting and disturbing read.
This sounds like this was a high-profile person, because the way to describe it is he
worked on Capitol Hill.
Right, he worked on Capitol Hill. Well, that's enough to make you go loo-loo.
Apparently, like, I remember reading somewhere she said that the ex-wife knew that the problem became, and I sound so insensitive to this woman, and I don't really mean to be, but that she knew that the problem was that the first time that he refused a glass of wine, and every night apparently they had a glass of wine, and it was their tradition, and he refused a glass of wine, and that was when she could mark the problems having started. And so, yeah, but if he was earning six figures working on Capitol Hill, like,
well,
you know,
the thing about it is, so they say now, the article is saying that he has given him a diagnosis that he's he stopped taking his medicine. He's got a 3-year-old son, so it looks like this decomposition is, as they call it, or happened rather quickly. So,
my understanding is that it was over 2 years.
Yeah, well, I guess that because he's got a 3-year-old son. So, you know, he evidently was with his wife long enough to have a child.
Right. Mm-hmm. And at the time, it happened at some point. But yeah, I mean, I would like to say, hey, if you're out there listening and you want to call in and tell us what the deal is and what you think about this article that's been written about you, you know, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167. Toll free if you need the line, it's 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351.
Because at least one thing in the article, the person does say the problem was that it was a process with few safeguards, and during much of the 20th century, all kinds of people who didn't belong, from free-thinking women to gay people, minorities, and rebellious children, wound up locked up in hospitals where abuse was common and conditions were often bleak. So it does acknowledge that because things went so far, you know, that there were abuses. So, yeah, but I am wondering, it looks like this was chronicled on day 730. Wow.
Yeah, that's what
day
I mean. Day 849,
Yeah, I wonder if the writer is really the wife, or must be a close family member or something, you know, because to cover a story like this for these many days.
It really is curious.
Or maybe it's fiction, you know, that the Washington Post has had a couple of writers who come under attack over the last 20 years for having made up composites of people. I'm old enough to remember there are two cases like that wherein people are under pressure to provide stories. In fact, one of them got a Pulitzer that had to be recalled.
Yeah, I don't know, but here it goes up to day 896.
Wow.
And so I'm not sure, and it really is disturbing on some levels, because, you know, what the family is hoping for at some points, and they say that, like, it sounds awful, is that, you know, he just finally, like, hurts himself or attempts suicide and doesn't succeed, and then maybe he'll be able to get help. And it's like, well, what does he exactly need help for? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, there's still no clear, like, they think that psychiatry is going to have some kind of answer for this, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
and it's not.
The thing about it is, like I said, from what happened, if you got someone who's so accomplished that all of a sudden they start exhibiting this withdrawing from life, what happened? No one seems, there's no real story about the man himself, you know, in this article. There's nothing really about him. There's more about the family members and how they are distressed by his withdrawal.
Yes, it's very troublesome.
And, you know,
and that's why this Helping Families and Mental Health Crisis Act, or whatever it is, that's why they're helping the families. That's what this is. This is trying to bring goodwill to the families of why H.R. 3717 should be published, passed, and that if only these families, this poor 66-year-old woman, this poor, his mother, his father, his ex-wife, his children, how many people would just feel better if he was locked up someplace being drugged? Because that's really what they're saying. I would feel so much better if he was locked up drugged somewhere.
Yeah, and these, the pictures that they take, I'm gonna try to connect with this reporter from the Washington Post, and I gotta go down further to see there's a comment section. Usually on these articles, there's a part where you can put comments in on it. I found that when you have comments, or a lot of people do comments, sometimes there's a follow-up story, or I send an email and ask, well, this happened in Merrill, didn't happen in D.C., but they got 545 comments to this thing.
So people
have Frank Blankenship made a comment on this. I don't know if you know Frank or not.
I do.
Yes, and some other looks like some other folks that we know have made some comments. So there's 545 comments. So I would not be surprised to see a follow-up article, because what I found with the, not always, but most of the time with the Washington Post, when there's a lot of interest like that, There'll be something else to follow, and that's why I believe that we should make comments, because
it really is. I mean, this is the brunt of the discrimination that people are fighting against. It wasn't enough that she has notified her kid's school to call the police if he shows up, or that she dreams he kills her, which she shakes off because he has never been violent, but which remains a visceral enough fear that when she sees a black SUV, as she does one day, pulling into a gas station across from her office, she is startled. It's just like his, she says, squinting at the car. When she sees a homeless man walking by her office, she thinks that could be her ex-husband too, and sometimes the sight of him makes her cry. But none of that was enough, so she is waiting for him to become sicker, so he might become dangerous, so he might get some help. She imagines how it might happen. Maybe if he stopped eating and passed out, that'd be an ideal situation, she says. Maybe if he steals food and gets caught, and if he's in a state of confusion so police officers could see, she says. You hope he tries to kill himself and fails, she says. My goodness, she says, realizing how horrible that must sound.
Well, this is what somebody else is saying. Here's some comments. This man is a very unfortunate situation. His family mishandled him at the onset of his mental issues. His wife should never have left him. She did the very opposite of what her marriage vows asked her. To distrust her own life partner and subsequent to see that the person in the same way as an impartial professional would is betrayal. This man was clearly not feeling safe, was worried about his children and wife, was acting in the only way he knew would comfort him. He was never a danger to his family. To take his children away from him was cruel. His wife should have stayed and helped him. Only if he hurt her should she have left. But he didn't. This article is politically driven. Readers should not allow it to dissuade a change of opinion regarding involuntary institutionalization. The horrors of this process are cataloged globally. It goes on and on. So people are making comments to this. And that's the good thing about the Post and some other papers is that, and even when we see news stories on television, they have events. All of them have a have websites now, Facebook pages, and we should let our voices be heard so that they so that other people that see the articles or the stories can get a different side.
Right.
So we're not voiceless.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I just wanted to give out the number, and there's like literally 12 people who are online right now on the phone. So if any of you want to speak, it's either star 1 or 1 if you want to get patched through. Okay, there we go. And if you want to call in, the number is area code 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, it's 855-346-3351. Area code 970, your line is open.
Yeah, Lauren, it just boggles my mind. All of a sudden, just because some doctor puts a label on you, your freedoms, your basic right to liberty and, you know, what our forefathers fought for has been canceled out for you because some person put a diagnosis on you. Because if you don't, A, agree with the diagnosis, or B, you say, okay, but I'm not going to follow your advice, somehow I don't have that right anymore because of the diagnosis, you know. And I remember one time I was in the hospital and with pneumonia, and I was asked, everybody gets asked this question, who has pneumonia, if you were to stop breathing, what would you like? Would you like to be resuscitated or not? Do you want, you know, and I've always said DNR, do not resuscitate. And because I was in my 40s and with a mental health diagnosis, the doctor just totally disregarded it and put me down as, you know, why would you do that? If I have a right to do that, why question it just because you don't agree with it, you know, or a diagnosis that has nothing to do with my physical health has been given to me arbitrarily because I sought help. You know, I think back when I was seeking help, I welcomed a diagnosis because I bought into the baloney that they told me. Now I wish I had never done that. Just because I'm going through a hard time doesn't mean you slap a diagnosis on me that's going to affect my day-to-day life for the rest of my life. And
right.
I regret that I was compliant with it, but I was under great stress. And I would have welcomed any help at the time because I was homeless and jobless, you know. And I was offered help and some answer. But that it follows me 25 years later to that my family could, you know, my family who is not a part of my daily life could, if they knew they could, because
right.
I recently made a decision I know they did not agree with, and I was fortunate enough that they were not educated enough, but they could have stopped me from making that decision.
And Murphy wants to change all that. Murphy wants to change all that.
Yeah,
everybody needs to be educated about this. Yeah.
Well, and the thing is Just because you don't agree with my choices doesn't mean I am, if I'm already diagnosed in my symptoms, and B, if I'm not diagnosed, that I should have a diagnosis. That's the problem when families can just easily commit you or easily get help for you, because a lot of these families don't agree with your choices. I mean, another hot topic is some politicians, I don't even remember their names, but are saying, you know, people who are gay don't have to be gay.
Texas, with the conversion therapy,
right.
Just passing
yeah.
all that conversion therapy
yeah.
crap
and
in
the
Texas.
Thing is,
yeah.
oh, if you want it. I mean, I don't know about you, but when a person has been, is going through, you know, questioning if they're gay or not, and they speak it out loud, if your family doesn't like it, they're going to highly recommend that you go through this aversion therapy to the point where if the Murphy bill goes through, or bills like that, because I don't see that the Barber bill is that much better as far as
yeah.
civil commitment goes, but
or early intervention and screening.
Right.
Yeah. You know, that's exactly.
And it's proven, I mean, yes, psychiatry has taken it off their diagnosis as a mental illness, but there's enough people out there that think it can be changed, or it's a choice.
And not to mention, like, gender identity dysphoria
right.
and all the other, quasi-diagnoses they still have in there. But still fit. But yeah, this idea that in Texas in 2014 that it's legal to do conversion therapy, what world are we living in? And so absolutely, your family doesn't agree with your quote-unquote choice, and now
right.
all of a sudden you're, mentally ill and you're in denial. And this is just evidence of your grandiosity and evidence, let's call it schizoaffective disorder, and because we're not going to look at issues like was being talked about by somebody on Facebook earlier around issues of attachment or issues of the environment or issues of whatever, or like the fact that your family is like screwed up because they don't, so, you know what I mean? Like this is the whole issue
well,
in the first
and the
place.
Choice doesn't have to be as choice of sexuality. My choice I made was to move and to go somewhere where they thought I would not be serviced well. Well, you know, that was, first of all, not that I, that that's the case, but the thing is, they...
I didn't do that.
They lived close to me. They lived 2,000 miles away from me, but and if they were closer, I could see them going to my providers and saying, well, we got to prevent this. It's not good for her. And part of the reason why I moved is so I could easily drop out of the mental health center, because the way public mental health centers go, if you're not certified and you just move out of the county you live in, it's easy to disappear into the woodwork, because once you're out of their county, they don't no longer feel obligated or legally obligated to follow you or to make sure you're getting treatment.
Another reason the Murphy bill is
certified.
A danger.
Right. Yeah, because all you have to do is get involuntary treatment or anything like that, and you can be prevented from free movement.
Right.
You know? I just thank God that a year ago, that when I was homeless a year ago, I did not go for the opportunity was I could get a housing voucher where I only paid one-third of my housing, but it was tied to the mental health center. So in order to maintain that housing, I had to not only follow, not only be a part of the mental health center, I had to agree to their treatments according to what they wanted. Of course, they didn't present it quite that way. Their idea was, you know, we would come to an agreement about your treatment, but I've never, ever been in agreement about my treatment. I've always made less medication the better, and doctors don't agree with that. They think, you know, I purposely did shut them up, would accept prescriptions, even go and fill prescriptions, but not take it only because it was harder to fight them than it was easier to just let them think I was doing what they wanted me to do. And I refused after 20 years to do that anymore. And they were, I got in there quicker than they could stop me from or to hold me back. But I didn't tell them I was moving until 4 days before I moved. And they didn't ever had the opportunity to try to hold me back. And these are real incidents that, you know, people have to be underhanded. Otherwise, you know, everything, just because you have a diagnosis. Now, if I never had a diagnosis, people wouldn't care.
Right.
Okay? But, I mean, even my family wouldn't care. They would think maybe I was being inappropriate, but they would not have the same strong feelings because when I told them what I was going to do, they were like, you're mentally ill, you can't do that. And my mental health status, first of all, you know, just because at one time I was under a great crisis doesn't mean I'm under a great crisis today, 25 years later. And but you're diagnosed, so everything you do is questioned, you know, whether it be a doctor or a family member. It doesn't matter how long ago that diagnosis is. It doesn't matter how much you've improved or how far you've come. It's like being an addict. You're always an addict. You always will be questioned. You will always be looked at twice because of that history. So it's scary that that the government can intervene in your life in this manner, and B, that it's been going on for as long as I can, it has been. I called up the other day when you were talking about, you know, the 1850s, before, you know, slavery was ended, these things were happening, and so how many centuries ago this goes, who knows? But the thing is, if you aren't like the community around you, you've been marked. And that's why we have all these groups of people. And I would just like to be me. And thank God God has put people in my life where I can just be me, and no one's judging me. And if they are, they're not saying it out loud. And that's the important thing, that I still can have the choices. But I got away from a mental health center that was very controlling, and I'm not going to join another mental health center. And I'm not going to need to, because the crisis that got me in the mental health center no longer exists. I don't have those problems anymore, but their way they think is once diagnosed, always diagnosed. And that, to me, is the biggest crime, because, you know, when you have a medical condition, you don't, well, it's all according to the condition you have, but it's that whole thing, whether it's a medical condition like diabetes. I mean, you can find 50 books on how to reverse diabetes or become no longer a diabetic, but and have the blood sugar levels that say, if you didn't have the history, that would say you're not a diabetic. But I was told, once a diabetic, always a diabetic, by the doctor that was caring for me. So it's like, it doesn't matter what I do, I'm branded as for diabetes for the rest of my life, just like the mental health diagnosis. It's almost the whole thing, it's not just mental health. It follows, and the Justina Law, I mean, how many of the people in nursing homes or the elderly that don't have, are in nursing homes that don't have families, that are being drugged up
right.
the yin-yang because they need to control the patient.
Yep.
And there's hundreds and millions, hundreds of thousands to millions of elderly people who could be halfway functioning, but because of whatever they're in there for, especially if it's Alzheimer's or any of the dementias, where the behaviors may be troublesome. And why are they troublesome? Because the federal government or the state government only requires a certain patient staff ratio, and that's all they will give these people, and that ratio is always going to be not enough staff to patients. And the only way to control these innocent people are to drug them up the yin-yang. Not everyone's got families, not everybody, but, I mean, I've worked in nursing homes as well as had a mother in a nursing home, and all that matters in those places is that they have the staff-patient ratio that the government requires, and that everybody remains in some level of control, that patients aren't abusing other patients, the patients aren't abusing the staff. So
right, and
people,
I think I think with the H.R. 4989 that we should be all trying to get to Bachman and all of these folks and try to get these kinds of issues brought into it from the jump.
Right.
That this should
children.
Include...
Because children is, Justina was a child. The thing is, she was a teenage child. I think that was part of the issue with her, because teenagers are always wrong. But the people who are unable to make decisions for themselves, whether they be developmentally disabled, whether they be elderly with dementia or health problems that they cannot make their own decisions, it's all about management of the people instead with the least amount of staff. And that is a crime as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and since all psychiatric drugs are still experimental,
I don't think the medical people see it that way.
But
because
it's all about
I do see it that way. I would never take a drug that could affect my brain chemistry anymore. But it's a standard of care out there that these drugs are acceptable. It's not
right,
acceptable
but
to me.
Technically, many of them are technically still experimental drugs. Just because of the length of time that they have to post-market be on the market. I think it's a six-year period or something where the drug is still considered, it's available on the market, but it's still experimental.
My first drug that I was given was lithium, and lithium had many, many side effects with me, but by the time I was taking lithium, it was considered the drug of choice for bipolar. Now that has changed, but all those newer drugs, I would say, fall into that experimental stuff. And the thing is, you know, we are the ones that are crazy when we say, "Doc, are you really thinking that I'm going to take something like that?" I mean, even for even for something like a physical bladder problem, okay, or your bladder is hyperactive, we're going to give you, you have a choice of six medicines, but every single one of those medicines is going to make you thirsty and you're going to drink more. So I'm like, okay, so you're saying the solution to my hyperactive bladder is to take a pill that's going to make me drink more. That logically does not work out. So you're telling me, you know, so whether it's something for your bladder or something for your brain, you know, I'll choose to take a walk if I need to change my brain chemistry, because those endorphins do a much better job. My own body, healing my own body, does a much better job than your SSRI.
Yeah.
So, and it's only because people are not aware of the facts that these drugs will actually stop your brain from healing itself or dealing with itself. I mean, I was appalled when I learned that an SSRI drug actually makes your brain stop producing those chemicals on its own, you know. And that you that's why with withdrawals, when you take, you go off of that, you technically need you that drug because your brain doesn't no longer know how to make the chemical in there. So psychiatry is actually causing the problem. But I'm wrong,
yes.
And I'm mentally ill, and
right.
I'm
You're
not
right.
compliant, or you know. So it's sad. But the general public is buying this, and
hook, line, and
sinker. Yeah. So thank you for letting me talk. I just find that the whole thing, I mean, I think our forefathers would be crying if they knew what they fought for is slowly, the liberties are slowly being taken away, because it's not just with the mentally ill. It's with people who make choices that other people don't like. And you don't have to be mentally ill to make a choice other people don't like. And, you know, being gay is one of those choices that other people don't like that has skirted the mental health diagnosis now. But there are many things, you know. Now,
but not in the past. And that was something that was... That was won and had to be fought for to have that freed.
So
although they're actively trying, like you brought up with Texas, with the conversion therapy, there is definitely a cohort of them who want to see that reconsidered.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a scary world out there, because, you know, to be free, truly free, to do what... for your own pursuit of happiness, it really doesn't exist as it did when our forefathers fought for us. It really doesn't, because I want to know how many people thought George Washington was crazy in the Revolutionary War, you know?
Right.
Because I'm almost certain he was thought of as being crazy.
Well, you know, there's a powerful, I just want to inject this as one. I just watched a documentary on German officer by the name of Goebbels.
There's a lot of feedback on one of the lines. I can't tell which, but if you're on a speakerphone or something.
You have to really look at with HR, with the Murphy bill, and what happened in Nazi Germany, and what things, this all is about control, this is all about a return to involuntary commitment of people, and people better wake up, because this is not about a subset. I know a lot of people think, well, this is just about a small category of people. It is not about that. It is about really being able to, as the other caller said, being able to to control other people's behavior and to penalize people because they make choices that you don't think is right for them.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that that's so much of the essence of what the whole challenge to psychiatry is in the first place. And I just want to remind people, if you'd like to call in and talk about this or anything else, the number to call is area code 267-521-0167. It's 267-521-0167. And if you need a toll-free line, it's 855-346-3351. 855-346-3351. And if you're one of the people who are listening on the phone and want to talk, be sure to press star 1, to press the star before the 1, and that should get you queued in to be able to talk to us. And so first-time callers, welcome. And so if you want to give a call, we've got about half an hour left or so. So I think that, what, you know, Maria, I appreciate you calling, and I want to just say that, like, this issue of somebody being able to make a choice, and I think that relates right back to the yellow door piece, right, that we were talking about, that this, they didn't like the choices this guy was making, and
and he needed support. He needed support. And none of the ways they really in that article say how they supported it. Just like Maria saying, you know, she chose the move. People don't say, well, you know, how can I may not like your choice, but how can I support you in this choice? You know, you decided to quit. They didn't say why he quit his job, or whatever. You know, could have lost his job. You know, you decide that you don't want to be married anymore, and you don't think that somebody being married, all of a sudden you say you don't want to be married anymore, that's not going to affect them. You know, things like moves, getting divorces, people not working in their career or chosen field, those are all things that affect everybody.
Right, there's just no dignity for somebody to be able to have their own life and to be able to have that kind of support, especially from those who are closest from you. So there's this other section in here where, you know, she goes to the ex-husband's house, this man, and the neighbor says, I almost didn't recognize you. You're so skinny. He says, hugging her, he's gone, right? He's gone, she says. She had monitored his Skype calls with the boys a few days earlier. He appeared to be in some kind of shed. Then it says, I think it's better to come through here, the friend says, motioning toward a basement window. He may have something pointed at that front door. The friend starts bashing the glass with a brick. Jennifer yells into the broken window, excuse me, anyone in there? She slips through the window and lands in the laundry room, and for the first time in more than 2 years, she is inside of the house. She turns on a light. Like, what would happen if he had done that to her house?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, they don't, like I said, I'm going to contact the author, and like I said, there's 500 and some comments there. You know, I want to know, you know, like some of the comments, they say, well, you know, if you care about a person, just think about this. You're marriage ends. That's marriage is ending, moving, stuff like these. All of these are things that even if people don't have trauma or mental illness, depending on what theory you believe in, you don't have those things can affect anybody. If I say I married you and I say we're going to death do you part and all this, and all of a sudden you are not, you know, no longer married, that's going to affect you.
Yeah.
If you have a 6-year high-powered job and all of a sudden, whether you choose to do it or whatever happens, you don't have it, those things are going to affect you. We all know people who have lost a position or they had a breakup or whatever else, you know. This man needed lots of support, and people wanted to do what was quick. Wanted to commit it, wanted to take some medication or whatever, And like the officers told him, that he hasn't threatened anybody.
Right. And
you know,
I'm just looking at Frank Blackenship's comment on the Washington Post page. And he writes, and Frank, I'm right with you. Dr. Thomas Saz once suggested the development of two types of psychiatrists, psychiatrists for the defense and psychiatrists for the prosecution. Forced treatment is all about social control. Public safety is seen as the issue rather than the patient's own best self-interest. Many, if not most, psychiatrists at the present time are psychiatrists for the prosecution. This poor man's family are seeking psychiatrists for the prosecution. Now, whether or not they hate him, I leave you to you to decide. If they do, as with other relatives of mental patients, they have a lot in company. And I think that that is just right on, Frank Blackenship. I don't know if you're out there listening, but you are just right on with this idea. And thanks for bringing Saz into this conversation, because
there's a lot of comments there. I mean, I think people should read the article and go there and read the comments and leave their own, because you know people were explaining the history of why people are not doing this. I mean, you know, people don't realize that how dangerous these laws are, because, you know, if I decide not to go out of my house, and I don't bother anybody else, I pay my rent or pay my mortgage or whatever it is, and I'm not making a public nuisance, I'm not walking up down the street naked, I'm not threatening you or doing anything like that, you think that you're okay, but you tuck your head under and you go on about your business. And this is the thing about public mental health systems particularly, and that with Murphy also it could extend to people in private care, because I'm assuming that this guy is, if he had a six-figure job on Capitol Hill, that probably COBRA or something kicked in. So he's not subject to... So, you know, even if you go into a private psychiatrist, you might be subject to this. If you've got an activist family, because it would be so much easier for, you think about the guy in, what's his name, John Nash. His wife took him back in the house, not as husband and wife, but just so that he could be cared for, and that had a lot to do with his recovery. So you don't have to, just because your person is sick, if you became paralyzed, your spouse wouldn't just all of a sudden just, you know, up and poop and, you know, leave you or whatever else. People need support. We start thinking about what we do want. We don't want people to be forcibly chemically killed. We don't want people to be forcibly locked up. And I think that most people would say that they either want to be left alone or they want the support. And we should say those are the things that we want. And that if you're not, I always say, if someone says they're going to hurt you or whatever else, believe them. But this guy's not doing anything to anybody else. He's, you know, minding his own business. Of course, he's not having interactions with his mother and father, and I would guess I would feel betrayed if somebody went and testified against me to be locked up like that. I wouldn't want to be bothered with you, would you?
Well, I mean, and I think that's part of it is that they're, you know, that they're pulling this idea that, you know, they don't know, the mother doesn't know how long she's going to have to work because she keeps giving him money, and so the psychiatrist's advice is to cut off all the support, that way he'll have to crash and burn, and then you'll be able to get him help, because then he's going to do something, because then he'll be considered dangerous. And so stop supporting him, stop giving him money, get you know, the ex-wife sells the house so that now he'll become homeless. Because maybe if he's homeless, then he'll have to deal with what it is, and then they'll have to force him into treatment. And so they're taking away every support that this poor guy has, you know, whatever he's been through. At no point do they answer the question, what happened to this guy? To what happened?
What happened? So, you know, if you're in suburban Maryland, got a six-figure job on Capitol Hill, I mean, those are very demanding jobs. Those guys, you know, I used to... managed a restaurant just 6 blocks from the Capitol. And those people worked long hours.
Demanding jobs, say something to the wrong person, get involved with the wrong thing, make some kind of statement off the cuff that winds up putting your candidate or whoever it is that you're supposed to be covering their ass every second in jeopardy, and you're gone. Like, I mean, like, these are, who the hell knows? What we know is that one night he didn't want to have a glass of wine, and that's when all the problems started.
Well, when somebody giving him something, you know, I don't want to read things into it. They're not there, but I've known people to tell me that they've done this to their loved ones that didn't want to take medication, that they put it in food or something else, or something else has happened. But I want to know. That's what I'm going to say to the Washington Post. I'm going to send an email to her. I'm going to ask her. I said, well, what happened to this guy? I mean, it sounds like they don't give his name or anything like that. They do have pictures of the, I guess, the wife in the yard. They have a picture, a silhouette of the father of the person. But they don't really give his name or anything like that. But what happened to it? You know, just exactly what happened. You know, you're married. You got two kids. You got a job on Capitol Hill. What in the hell happened? You know, excuse my French, but, you know, it sounds like there's a little bit more to this story than just, well, all of a sudden a grown person, they wake up and they had all this going on, and all of a sudden now they come down with schizoaffective, whatever, and even those people that believe in that, the illness of that, from that kind of, what they teach you in school about it doesn't happen like that.
But I think even the more troubling thing is the for a newspaper to be putting this out as on the national page, as if this is a fair and balanced story, as if this is representative of all people, as if this psychiatric anything actually exists. I mean, It's fiction. This story is fiction, and it is propaganda to create a
propaganda. We don't know. This might be a real person, but the fact
I'm not saying it's not a real person, but this piece is propaganda to create sympathy for families and to get the average person to think from their perspective. Like you were saying before, sit with them for a little bit, and to cause them to feel for the families, which then will allow things like H.R. 3717, the Helping Families in Mental Health Crisis Act, get pushed forward.
You can't allow it to happen. People got to go to WashingtonPost.com and look for this story. Make comments, send emails to the writer, and because this is not worthy. I don't know what Washington Post and Wall Street Journal are sticking to a new low. I mean, you have to look at the background of the person who wrote the story. They write urban stories. Why is this woman who came from Newsday, who was on the East Africa head desk, now writing a story about mental health? Why is she doing this? You know, it's a little bit. It's this. Why wasn't somebody from the health section doing this?
It really is. I mean, the story is called Behind the Yellow Door: A Man's Mental Illness Worsens, and this is one of the greatest works of propaganda for involuntary outpatient commitment that I've ever seen. I think this goes beyond anything Tory and Jaffe have been able to put together thus far, or Murphy or whoever. They're all, you know, different versions of the same thing, and that this is really this is intended to evoke emotions from people. This is intended to paint family members in such a positive light and to create sympathies for the families of people who have had family members who have been psychiatrically assigned. This is, and yeah, I agree, Yvonne. Everybody should be, and I'm going to go also and make a comment later this evening, and I think everybody should, and that we should stay on top of it and try to find out more.
Should be alert for stories like this all around the country, because we cannot let them just make these do these stories and not do their proper investigative reporting, because this is what's happening when they do these magazine pieces and whatever else. They have this one story. Not once did anyone say anything about the guy, himself. Did they speak to him or anyone that was close to him or what his life was like, other than the fact that he had went from a six-figure job on Capitol Hill. Did he have friends? I mean, all of a sudden, why is it that there's no one else? There's just this wife, the mother, and the father. That's it, you know. I mean, if you've got
right.
such a high-powered
job. Yeah, the
other
stories she's written are all on, the last three big stories she's written are all on Bo Burdell. So the last three stories she's written are all on Bo Burdell, the guy who was held in, who may or may not have been a deserter, and had been held captive and was discharged, and we exchanged the five major players from Guantanamo for him.
That's what she wrote.
Not
that's
Guantanamo.
What she was
from where? So yeah, mm-hmm. That's the Bo Burdell was the three big stories that she had before this. So who?
Well, at least they had a reporter on it, because what people tell me is now that a lot of these newspapers. They just go to a service now for stories, and you don't have it. You know, I usually try to check the L.A. Times and some other papers to see what they're saying about us. And I just said everybody should check your local newspapers, your regional newspapers, to see how they're covering the psychiatric industry, because most people don't have people in their life who can give them the real truth like we have on this show. And so we have to stay on top of them. We have to keep them honest.
Right. We absolutely do. And that's an obligation. And it's great to see that people like Frank Blankenship and others, Psych Survivor, Kasur, and a few other names I recognized of are speaking out, and other people should go and speak out, and we really need to just keep it up and make sure that our perspective gets out there. I'll be following up about HR 4989 with Bachman and others' offices on Monday to see whether or not that, because the text isn't written, and maybe that from the very start they'll just naturally include some of these other groups of people that we've talked about, like adults or...
Yeah, you can tell them, you want to bring this up on your radio show. And, you know, who knows? Michelle might, Bachman might even appear.
Yeah, why not? Can't hurt to ask. Hurt to ask. And so I will do that on Monday. I'm also, there's still a couple of things that I'm still waiting on. The Fort Bend... county district attorney, I'm still waiting a return call from about Michael, the death of who was shot 11 times in his bathroom, and whether or not that's going to going that video is going to grand jury, I'm still waiting to find out. And then I also am waiting on some issues around the California Disability Rights Organization. I had called trying to find out some information about Laura's Law, and also this other place called Semper Semper Vines Psychiatric Institute in, I think it is Eureka, California. If anybody knows any information about this or has any complaints about it, it's been brought to my attention as a place that has really out of control restraints and seclusion and drugging, and also refuses people who are voluntarily looking for services. And so Semper Vines in Eureka, California, if you know anything about that, feel free to get in touch with me.
What about the Black Robe Effect? Aren't you having a special, Lauren, on that?
Yeah, on July 9th, from 9 to 11 p.m., we'll have a special on judicial accountability and the jury trial, and that's going to be with Catherine Hine and Aubrey Ellen Shomo, and perhaps we might have a very special guest that night also, and I'm working on that, and I'll let people know as soon as I have a little bit more information. Oh, hang on 1 second. I might have a little bit more information right now. Area code 330, your line is open.
Oh, hello, it's David.
Hi, David. How are you?
All right. I didn't mean to interrupt. I was just going to say my concern more is about the psychiatric profiling, because there are some people that have some issues. And I don't know, there might be legal issues, but the psychiatric profiling, it can be horrendous. I mean, it's just the burden, and, you know, for some people like myself, it's like, you know, you can't even believe they're able to get away with what they do. But, you know, the thing is, I found if you get in touch with some counseling, talk to law enforcement, try to fend it off, it seems to help.
Right. Well, yeah, but I think that this psychiatric profiling is at the heart of the problem, right, for so much of it. And then if you are coming from, if the people who are doing it are also then in positions of power or social power, how that gets further complicated and people get further dehumanized and have less of a shot at being heard because they're then also compromised on issues of power, if I'm hearing you. And I think the idea that because somebody's had a psychiatric label allows them, like Maria was saying earlier, for the rest of their life to have this thing affect every choice that they make and have every question or decision that they make then questioned, it really is such a violation.
It most definitely is. I went to art school, as a matter of fact, and I only had one art show, but a lot of my work was missing before, you know, I was able to take it to market, so to speak. And I was talking to a rabbi about it, and he said, "Oh, you know, that's you know, if they take it away, then you don't have any skills. You know, they can keep you in the system that way." So it gets, you know, the thing is, losing the fear of all that might be some of the solution, without being antagonistic, so to speak, or without laying down like a lamb and being somebody's like slave, so to speak.
Right, there's some real legitimate reason to be fearful right now because of the way that they're creating these laws that just further institutionalize the right for them to do psychiatric profiling, and how as a people we're just being totally disparaged, and it's just wrong, but that people should be able to speak freely and up against it without fear of retribution. And I don't think that happens.
What they're doing is they're trying to create an atmosphere wherein people feel as though that there's a plague upon the land. This is the atmosphere that there are all of these people who are unknown to their own selves that are dangerous to the public. There's a coupling of emotional distress and public safety. And so they create this hysteria. They did this in Nazi Germany about Jews, and they first started out with people who had developmental disabilities or mental health. They're trying to create a hysteria. Therefore, when they create this hysteria, when they do that, then they say to safeguard the public, then they can do all these things.
Right.
And that they're benevolent. They're being benevolent. They're really doing it for your own good. Even though you're not bothering anybody, you're not doing anything to anybody, that, you know, you're just a powder keg at any time, you could just flip out. So that's what they do, to try to create this hysteria that there are all these people out here that need to be controlled. Yesterday someone came on the line, and that was the question I asked. I said, well, what is the purpose of some of these proponents of the involuntary outpatient commitment? And the person had said, even though they were friendly toward the psychiatric system, they said to say that it's control. And that's what
it
is.
Well, it is control. And so, David, I'm just wondering we've only got 3 minutes left, and so I'm just wondering if you've got any, like, how you'd like to follow or things that you think that we should be focusing on in the discussion in the future.
Well, I talked to my therapist specifically about this, and I was thinking, like, people have mental problems or whatever, you know, the thing is that, you know, they should be schooled how to react in certain situations. Therefore, their safety would be utmost. That way they don't act out in order to get more medicine, and stuff like that. And, you know, therefore decreasing any reaction. So, I mean, because a protagonist would easily be able to make somebody react in a certain way if they're not schooled properly.
Right, I think that that's, I think that that's one of the things of trying to get the word out to people that, like, hey, look, to any psychiatrist, if you say that you don't have this thing, that's evidence to them that you have it. So don't disagree with them, because that's just going to put you in a space where they're going to, do you know what I mean? It's the hardest thing in the world, because you have to sell yourself out. Even if you don't agree with what it is they're saying, if you disagree with them, that's going to give them the right to force you. And so educating people about the kinds of things that the psychiatrist is looking for in these tests, I think that's one of the part of it is that sometimes people don't even know what it is they're being inspected on. And then they honestly respond thinking that the person that they're talking to on the other side is there to support them. And then they have a rude awakening of where they're then labeled and for the rest of their life having to fight this response
own
to this
freedom school. We need our own freedom school. They would do that in the early years of the civil rights movement. They would have.
Oh. Hello?
Yeah.
In the Freedom School, yeah, in the early
Civil Rights days, they had Freedom School so to teach people about how to pass those tests where they made them interpret the Constitution or whatever. The same thing when the police come. Like, what do you do? Yvette Sangster, who is in Atlanta, Georgia, but she used to have Advocacy Unlimited in Connecticut, and I remember her a piece of work that she did about what happens when the police come. And it's the same thing with working with, if you're trying to exit the, and I do a little bit of that, when you're trying to exit the public health system, to disentangle yourself, especially when people have housing and they have all this other stuff, this tangle, how do you disentangle without causing repercussions on yourself? But we probably need to have something like that.
We have 40 seconds left. David, last word.
I don't know. Sometimes people are so traumatized by these high-pressure social groups that the only way to exist is with, to take what the government gives them, because there's no way for them to exist outside of that. It's how to get, the protagonist, not to react to those people.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting way of looking at it, and I think I really like the way you're talking about protagonist here in those terms. Yvonne, also, I think that this idea of the Freedom School is great, and we should continue talking about it. I want to thank everybody who called in, Maria and Yvonne and David and all, and everybody who's been listening. Until I talk to you next time, I'm going to ask you to keep speaking out, and talk to you soon.
Bye.